alustan siis sellele küsimusele vastamisega. Et mis aitab kaitsta.
Now we will continue and we will talking about let me answer to the question that was asked before we started the break, and how to protect yourself and your family when you work with people from the opposite sex. I mean, I am myself a woman and I'm working in men's, with men's colleagues. So it's a bit different dynamic than, you know, it is working as a man in women's environment. But for me, it has been very helpful that within my family therapy studies, I have analyzed myself quite a bit, and I have also analyzed a lot of different topics. For example, how I relate to people, different types of people, how I relate to different topics, including sexuality, topic of sexuality, which tends to be taboo in the church. I'm 45 years old, but maybe today in youth evenings they already talk about it in church. But when I was young and in church, I didn't hear anybody talking about sexuality in the church. Yeah, I have to admit to myself that I'm a normal person. I'm vulnerable, and I'm definitely not bulletproof. So I need to think about borders, where, how close can I let somebody come to me? What is a situation that I can manage, and where is the line where it becomes vague or confusing the situation? Working as a woman in men, with men, I also had to rethink my clothing. As you see right now, I'm wearing long skirt and I have this scarf around me. But that's also something I wear similar clothing when I go to work. I also have pastor's collar. So I've decided to do what I can, not to tempt anyone, but what other people think in their hearts, they are responsible for that. I cannot be responsible for them. And also that I have thought about certain borders for myself has also helped me to get out from borderline situations where I've been tested. Let's assume a situation I'm having pastoral care discussion with somebody, and this person starts telling me about his past experiences or sexual endeavors, adventures. And then I tell him that maybe I don't need this information. I don't need to have all the details. It's enough to know that I know that you had this relationship. So I need to dare and be able to draw clear lines. What are the topics that we talk about? And what are the topics that we don't have to cover in depth? You can just mention them, but we don't have to discuss the details. So you need to have courage to draw these lines for yourself, and also not to, swallow the hook. If I have analyzed these things for myself, then I don't even blush when I talk about these things or say this. And where I'm right now, I'm not where I was 20 years ago. I grew up in a home where we didn't talk about these things at all. I had to figure out these things for myself. But this is also part of the family therapy training to talk about these things and to set borders. And also, finally, you have to think how something like a side relationship or something can happen. I mean, this normally refers to something lacking in me. If I let something confusing, vague, something happen in my life, do I lack something? Maybe I lack soul intimacy. Maybe I don't get enough security feeling from my home, and then if I don't, then I need to deal with my home situation. And our life is not always clear and easy. Maybe you have a difficult period at home. I don't know, your children maybe are more nervous. Your spouse is also very nervous. We may not always be in the best state all the time, but I need to acknowledge this, that right now maybe I'm more vulnerable than normally. So it's important. And it's also, thank you for asking this question, because I'm not sure if I had spoken about this, if you didn't ask, but it is crucial. Even if you look around in the world, there are certain topics that Christian leaders tend to fall with. One is if they start collecting money for themselves. We know church works based on donations. Also Christian organizations work based on donations. But if this gets vague, blurry, we hear about scandals at times where somebody started to put something aside. It wasn't clear what was happening. And then also spiritual side went bad. The other thing is pride topic. If you're already an accomplished leader, have an important position, then it's really easy to become confident, self-confident and proud. And this is something that I need to deal with. I could always think, hey, look at me. I have PhD from Tartu University. Who are you guys? And that's how it's very easy to think, I'm a professional. I don't need to prove anything. I have a high level. But having this mindset, that helps you to really stagnate with this. Then I don't need to develop, at all. I'm a finalized product based on this. And the third thing is sexuality. If we are in Christian context in churches, having responsibility, then these are these typical traps. And we can think that, listen, I'm immune to this. But then, hey, life can surprise you. And another thought that I want to add is especially good that if you have a partner, spouse, if something starts going wrong, then you can easily, sincerely talk to him. I know it's risky to honestly talk. Maybe a spouse faints, completely freaks out if you mention anything like this. But if you have good trust relationship and something vague is happening in your heart, but the Bible says, right, that God reveals truth, but Satan wants to get things, make it confusing and blurry, but the truth shall set you free. Or maybe if you cannot talk to your spouse about it, then talk to a good friend. But if you sense something is getting confusing, then deal with this right now. Again, I'm not immune, or I'm not saying that anything like this can never happen to me. He asks, can we also say lack of transparency for this, confusing or vague situation? She says, when I mention vagueness or that is blurry, then, if you have ever dated somebody and then you're, looking in, catching somebody's eye and you have a good time, then let's say that you cannot be in relationship because you're already married to somebody else. But the situation where you sense that something else is in the air, a certain connection with somebody, and maybe not even flirt yet. It's easier to notice flirting, but before flirting, maybe you like somebody, you feel a certain attraction to somebody. And let's be honest, sometimes we do everything well, but in a certain situation, we may feel just attraction to somebody. Then we need to be attentive that it would remain a friendship, clear friendship. Or maybe you need to even take a step back. Maybe you're not ready for, you know, big friendship even. So you need to pay attention, yeah, with this. So thank you for asking this, and hopefully you will remember this from today. It's an important topic because it's so easy to slip in this area, and this slipping happens often, you know, without even knowing. And that can even happen to big Christian leaders, even Bill Hybels, or some of the big, big world-renowned leaders. You know, Bill Hybels was the founder of Global Leadership Summit. But the fact is, nobody's immune. I have to admit that myself, I, Maire Latvala, I'm not immune. I'm a fallible person. So whatever, I mean, I think he asked about Bill Hybels, but something was probably there. He said, I'm not gonna discuss his story though, but this is just one example of many. And myself as a woman working with men in prison, I know that as a woman, I'm probably attracted to men. That's why I need to pay attention to my clothing, the way I keep myself up. How I, you know, but when man is working in women's, let's say women's prison, then it's a different dynamic. Maybe these women will start attracting you, prisoners, and then you have to have this strength as a man, not to go along, but to say, hey, this is not correct. So you need to be, to dare to draw clear lines, borders. So let's talk now about religious development. Earlier we talked about faith-based development, or sorry, personal development, and here we talk about religious development. Have you heard about Jay Fowler, religious psychologist? And he has described how a person's faith develops. First is intuitive, projective faith. And children also perceive this supernatural to some extent. And this also depends on the growth environment. If child is being talked about God, or if he's being talked about, you know, Santa Claus and elf, then he thinks in these categories. But this invisible world is real for children. For example, my older child was afraid for a long time that wolf will come to his bedroom. So children have different, you know, lines, what is possible, what is not possible. But the next level is mythic, literal faith. Where they start to describe more based on logic and word by word. When the first intuitive phase, you can put in the same category Santa Claus, and angels, and you know, and etc. But in the second phase, the child hears about, you know, the faith story, and then he starts to think how these things can happen. And here, let me give you an example. I remember as a child, I never understood why Jesus talked story parable about the two builders. I mean, I think it's a very, very well, you know, common story to tell to children in Sunday school, you know. They sing about it, and then they make plays about it, they draw it. But I remember how I tried to wrap my mind around it as a child. Where is Jesus in this? What do you mean by building a house? So I couldn't understand this. And I thought that I was... And then later, it dawned at me. He talks about teaching. What is that, that I found my life on? Philosophical question. And for many years, I was thinking in two concrete terms. I talked about literally building a house about rock and bricks, you know, bricks and storm and wind and, you know, sand, etc. And I couldn't understand, why are they always talking about building a house in Sunday school? Why? Well, I'm a child. What do I have to do with building a house? So I think it was actually in my late teenage years when it finally dawned at me. And it's not, then I realized it's not about building a house literally, but it talks about, you know, something more philosophical. So some tips for Sunday school teachers. Great stories. Great to tell about Jonah and Nabelli's fish. But what will the child remember eventually? Maybe the child will remember that big fish eat people. But these are these typical stories, Bible stories that we tell in Sunday school. But what is that the child understands or takes to home? He takes the fact that fish eats people and then throws them up, vomits them out. Now, then the third one is conventional faith. This is where you confirm with certain religious groups' faith beliefs. And according to Fowler, this is where some grown-ups can get stuck in. We are being told in our church this period. For example, when I was a child, then we're being told that you should not wear makeup or miniskirt in church. They didn't explain why, but they just said it, and period. And in some stricter churches, they even said that women don't wear pants. But they didn't really explain why. Maybe there was somewhere this theological reason behind it, but it didn't come to me, back then at least. And some grown-ups, maybe you know some believers. He say, this is how it is. We don't argue about this. You have to do this and that's it. It is. We don't ask why, but we were told here, and we don't not going to discuss about this. So, this happens when a person is living with blinders, so to speak, all the time, or it happens until an event happens in a person's life that maybe breaks this understanding in a person's life. Because often, like accidents or death of a loved one or some serious events in a person's life can destroy this beautiful, idealistic, you know, world view. First they think that God is good, devil is bad, church is good, world is bad, etc. But then maybe a believer gets killed in a car accident, and then they start asking, where is this good God? And when a person starts asking these questions, then actually this clear black and white picture starts to break. And in this moment, some people actually leave faith. They say, I don't need that kind of a car, God, who doesn't fit in this, in my worldview. Or maybe so they leave faith, some people. But it can also happen in the better scenario that the person starts to put together a new picture, and then he comes to a point where he says, okay, God, I accept that I cannot understand everything, and I don't always understand what you're up to. This is the conjunctive faith, that I realize that these topics are bigger than I am. There are a lot of puzzle pieces that I cannot put together as a perfect picture, but I do believe that one time in the future, maybe on the other side, by God's help, I can put a picture together. And that's where a person comes to faith or gets a new perspective in faith. And these simplified pictures are being done away with, and a person needs to reconsider their world. This happened actually early on in my life. Fowler here talks about age here, but it doesn't always have to do with ages. I was 14 years old when my sister, 10 years older, and I went missing completely. And after that point, I thought that I was young, I knew that God is good, Satan is bad, nothing bad happens to good people, but it did happen. And I needed to deal with grief, with death, also about my own mortality, about my own fears for death. And I was 14 years old when my worldview was broken. And if something, anything could happen from this, is that my worldview is not smooth and simple. I'm not going to tell anybody, I know why this happened to you, because God, you know, punished or whatever. I'll never give these answers to anyone. And this is why I've later also dealt with grief topic. I wrote my master's thesis about child's grief. And I see more and more, but we'll talk about this in February more, but I see more and more that if a person grieves, then just rather be quiet. Do not give simple answers. The worst thing that you can do to a suffering person is to start, you know, like playing like a smart person, that, you know, I'm going to explain what has happened to, etc. Don't patronize, but just be quiet and listen. Number two, do not leave this person. That's another thing that people do. They try, you know, to offend or whatever person who's suffering. They don't know what to say, and then they just leave. But just be with them and do not leave them. This is so basic. Anybody can do this. Maybe it's hard if you have never dealt with any big pain in your own heart. If your own grief topic has not been dealt with, then then you may not be able to do this. But normally every person can do this. Hopefully we can talk about grief more in February. But Fowler's last level is universalizing faith. And this is where a person not just believes things, but they live them out with their whole being, like Mother Teresa. She got her hands dirty. She really did something. She really embodied God's love. I just read from somewhere why Mother Teresa's feet was hurting all the time, and they were even like deformed. Why? Because there were second-hand shoes for poor people, and Mother Teresa didn't want anybody to get bad shoes. So she always took the worst pair for herself, because she didn't want any poor people to have bad shoes. So that's why she wore them. And that was the reason why she had feet pain for many years. So this is a level of love. You know, she literally embodied and lived it out with her whole being. Now, Scacero also describes stages of faith, even though from a bit different angle. He says that life-changing awareness at the beginning of faith journey starts with the awareness of God. Then a person comes to faith, starts to grow, starts to contribute, to serve, and within this, there is a wall that the person faces, this desert, wilderness period. And those of us who have been in faith for a longer period, we can probably not, and we have experienced this. So I'm not, newer Christians, I don't want to scare you, but this will happen at one point, sooner or later. Even Jesus couldn't get away from wilderness, then why should we? And this is when, according to Fowler, this is where this beautiful, nice worldview breaks. And this is also Scott Serra talks about the same thing. Says everything that was functioning well up to this point will not function anymore. And then a person needs to reconsider, rethink about these things. And when they rethink in this moment, then they actually find deeper faith and deeper love of God than they had before. But often it comes through pain, through surrender to God. And then the last is, like Fowler said, last level is that the person serves God on a deeper level. You know that, God, I surrender to you. She says that I'm speaking so fast that I feel sorry for the translators. So researchers have found that religious sphere, religious life influences person, and there are different areas of their life. First is on a personal level, where a person finds meaning for their life. The other, second one is communal sphere, you know, where the quality of relationships is getting better, where a person makes better moral choices, or maybe even impacts culture. And then the third one is environmental sphere, where a person starts to think about, you know, society and nature, etc. It's not green transition that I'm talking about, but we look at nature as God's creation. Also, we look at Rembrandt's paintings with reverence, and we also admire nature as God's creation, and we honor it. The last one is transcendent sphere, which means that we have a relationship with someone who is above us, someone above other people. And these spheres impact each other. And in difficult, hard situations, you know, this religious dimension helps to cope with those difficult situations. On one hand, because it gives existential meanings, or if not meanings, then at least directions for thinking. And on the other hand, also it's been seen that those people who have church context, they may not get to psychologists as soon, because they already have the first security net, you know, as other people in the congregation who can help them and support them. We have, you know, experienced everything in the church. We have seen birth of children, we've seen death of older members, we've seen younger people getting married. Also, we've seen people breaking up. Also, we've seen accidents where people's lives are cut short. All this happens in congregation. But there's a bigger network creation that can offer certain security that maybe your own immediate family cannot even offer in some critical moments. Somebody wrote something on the chat. Okay, the translation, yeah. So it sounds like the original audio is as loud as translator's voice. But we'll probably be able to fix this during the break. We have to ask technician to come here. But then Now about value systems. Without value system, we cannot assist anybody. Even if you hear, you know, a secular professional saying that I don't have a worldview or I don't have any faith, then this person has not admitted it. But he does have certain worldview for sure. Many people, you know, think that, let's say, Estonians are very secular people. But if you listen, there is horoscope in radio every single morning. There's so many esoteric bookstores or trainings about opening chakras or, you know, retreats. So there's a lot of that going on in Estonia. And there's also a lot of that among teachers, therapists, and psychologists. And many who think they're not religious, they actually recommend to their clients yoga and breathing exercises, other things. So if we as Christians, believers, say that we have their value system and worldview, it doesn't mean that they don't. Rather, it's that they just haven't admitted it yet, what they have. Now, what is different about Christian soul care, pastoral care, is that it's done, provided by a Christian, and it may also may be connected to activity of a certain specific congregation. But the therapist, you know, also a counselor brings on certain set of problems from their own life, which means that first we have to think, who am I? What is it that I carry in my own heart? And what worldview and values do I have before I start helping somebody else? Unfortunately, all too much I've seen somebody starting to teach somebody how to live, do this, do that, live like this. And maybe I'm too critical, but I'm looking from side and I'm asking, but do you live like this yourself that you recommend to others? Have you dealt with these topics yourself? It's the same. The Bible says it's so easy to see splinter in, you know, somebody else's eye. But maybe there's something wrong in my own eyes. So therefore, to help others, first you need to really examine yourself. Now, have you had any questions up to this point? He has a question about conventional faith. Can we help people? Is it like, should we break this bubble? He asks. She says, I think that for the most part, we cannot make other people, persons, processes faster. And it's a big burden to take on your shoulders. I think you should keep your energy for other things. I also thinking about grief now. You can think that, you know, why are we grieving so long? Get over. Or maybe somebody was in love and didn't receive love back and then was heartbroken. And then friends are telling her, you know, get yourself together, you know, get your act together. Why are you still heartbroken, etc.? But we cannot make other person's processes faster. If there anything they can do or help to get it faster is just to be there for this person and not just to, you know, cope with this. And if we see that the person is completely stuck, then maybe they need psychological help, professional help. and then you can, you know, help them to get it. But you cannot just tell them that, you know, do faster or develop faster. We know children develop with different tempo. It's the same for us adults, that we digest with different setbacks in life with different topic. Some people get over very fast, but the one person fails an exam and then 2 years later they're still, you know, still haven't gotten over from this. She says that she failed an exam in psychopathology in university. She failed, it was very medical, but she still remembers that. Still inconvenient to think about it, even though it was 14 years ago. So you get it. But others say that, I don't care, I'll be fine. I'll do it again. He says to a lot of people who has received instruction how to live. But there are also some people who haven't received any instruction for other people. And they can be in a situation where but sometimes they do need help, and then I'm trying to think how to help them. I didn't really hear because he was far from the microphone. But anyways, here we're also dealing with, we'll talk about differentiation soon, but the fact is some people are more independent, even if they haven't, let's say, received something in their childhood. But they still continue, even if they go to the wrong direction, but they keep going. But there's also other people who are very inconfident, unconfident, and they want to really, you know, get help from somebody. And maybe even in the church you see people who really keep close to pastor or other people, and they always need, you know, ask, what do I have to do now? Need guidance every step of the way. And here you may not even, you might need even more wisdom how to help them. You can't take responsibility for their life, but you can encourage them and you can empower them. And this empowering them is that I bring forth this hidden strength in them. I help them think that, you know, how did you cope to this point? You had this also hard period in your past. How did you get help then? Who did you connect with? So sometimes all who have been in hard situation, you know, you feel that that's it now. But it's so good if somebody from my side helps me to see some hidden resources within me and says, actually, you're a pretty brave person. You have gone through these very hard things, but and you'll be fine. You're getting better. It's not like it says in an American film, it's gonna be right. Don't say that. But that, see, you made it this far and you have been able to cope. And I'm also here trying to help. So you support them, but you can't take full responsibility for them. They need to walk and make their own decisions. Sometimes I'm being asked, what should I do? Should I choose A or B? And I say, how do I know? How should I know? So I can't take responsibility for that. Let's say somebody comes to me and says, should I get married or not? Now, when I take this responsibility, say, yeah, sure, get married. And then 2 years later, person is stuck and comes to me and says, you told me to get married with this guy. Or let's say that I say, no, this person is not your type, don't do that. Yeah, sometimes I see red flags and I can point it out. You know, this person has, let's say, addiction problem, whatever, or he's not very trustworthy because he already had 10 relationships and he was in every relationship 6 months. So I can point out these things, red flags, but just to say yes or no, plainly, no, this person needs to decide for themselves. And even if they choose wrong, then they bear responsibility for that. And I cannot take this on my shoulders. No break yet. How do you like tartar? How do you eat your tartar? I've heard different versions. Some people eat it with salt and butter. Some eat it with milk, like a soup. Some eat it. Some people eat it with sugar. Some just boil it, and you know, you eat it with meat sauce. And one time when I visited somebody, I was given tartar like porridge. Or salad, even in salad. So, if you think about it, then we all come from different background, don't we? And probably if we love buckwheat, actually, is the word in English. If you like buckwheat or not, maybe you ate so much buckwheat in your childhood that you never want to eat it again. Or maybe it was your favorite food when you grew up, your buckwheat. And every time when you're being offered buckwheat, then you think, ah, oh, I remember my mother's kitchen, thanks to God again. Right? And now imagine that the couple gets together. One is used to eating salty buckwheat and the other one sweet buckwheat. It happens. So in every family, they have, you know, certain understanding how things should work. And in every family, there are legends, myths, and scenarios. Legends are warning stories. From four mothers, four fathers, who did really well or maybe failed. Or maybe your grandmother went to school through very, you know, through thick winter with very cold and there are wolves. And when I didn't want to go to school in the morning, then they told me, you know, remember what your grandmother went through when she went to school. Or how people survived during war. My grandmother had to survive with three children during war. And this has been a powerful story in my family. This also has, I think, formed me a strong woman, made me a strong woman. If my grandmother did it, then I had to do it as well. And on the other hand, because of war, many families didn't have men anymore. Men either got killed or went missing or were injured because of the war. And women had to take leadership. Or maybe a story, what happens to a person who left home, like warning story. Like, there's also some pointing a finger here. Be sure that you don't do this, or you know these stories, right? And also, myths are these either spoken or unspoken beliefs about how things act. For example, men need to, you know, be breadwinners, bring income in. We Estonians, we have this film about a family who goes to this island, so it died. And this also, the stereotype there is that men need to feed family. Or maybe that you don't share about your family affairs outside of your family. And you see how strongly it can hinder you from getting help if you have this agreement or understanding in your family that you don't talk about family matters outside of family, then you don't even reach out to help from counselor. Another Estonian film, Mehed ei nuta, Men Don't Cry, with a group of men went to an island, not an island. Or if you think how little girls are being raised, if they, you know, fall and have a little accident, then they're being, you know, told that, don't worry, I'm gonna, you know, it'll be fine. But if a boy falls or has same situation, then they say, don't cry, you know, men don't cry, you'll be fine, get up, etc. So we treat differently. We have, you know, received this package from our homes. Or this understanding that men cannot be trusted, women need to organize themselves and everything. Or my grandmother always said, there are no conflicts in our family. No conflicts. And I always thought that if we had some disagreements, then what are these? And my grandmother was very energized. And sometimes when he got angry, then she said to us, throw me out from the window if you don't like me. But she also added that there are no conflicts in our family. So with that note, we are going to take a